Chapter 53. The voice of the British Tornado FB fighter pilot crackled over the intercom. Welcome to the beautiful island of Cyprus, birthplace of Aphrodite, goddess of love. Austin sat behind the pilot in the seat normally occupied by the supersonic plane's weapons system operator. The plane made a circle over the British Air Force base near the old Roman city of Curium before it dropped out of the sky in a quick descent. As the jet's landing gear thumped on the tarmac, Austin gazed out at the runway lights after the 90-minute flight from England and wondered at how small the planet had become. Hours earlier, he had hitched a ride on a CIA helicopter to Albany. From there, an executive jet transported him to Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland, where the Blackbird was housed in a special hangar and only flown at night. The SR-71 had been developed as a long-range strategic reconnaissance aircraft that could fly at speeds of more than Mach 3.2 and reach an altitude of 85,000 feet. The flattened fuselage, more blue than black, was more than 100 feet long, excluding the 5-foot-long nose probe. 2 vertical stabilizers rose from the rear of the plane like twin shark fins. One of the 32,500-pound thrust engines could power an ocean liner. Austin was given a high-protein meal of steak and eggs, a medical exam, and fitted out for a special suit similar to those used on the space shuttle. As he suited up, he breathed in pure oxygen to filter gases out of his body. A van took him to the barn where the plane was kept, and he was buckled into a specially built passenger seat. The plane rendezvoused with a tanker 7 minutes after taking off. Less than 2 hours later, it landed at a British RAF base in England. Flagg had arranged for the fighter to transport Austin on the last leg of the trip because it would be less obvious than a U.S. Air Force plane in Cyprus, where the British had long maintained a military foothold. A car drove out onto the tarmac and paced the fighter jet until it stopped. 3 men dressed in black slacks, turtlenecks, and berets got out of the car to greet Austin as he climbed from the plane. "Good evening, Mr. Austin," said the group's leader, a swarthy Greek-American who identified himself as George. He said he had been brought in from Athens to rendezvous with agents from Cairo and Istanbul. A 4th man, who was attached to the American embassy in Nicosia and was familiar with the island, had gone ahead to scout out the situation. "Are you armed?" George said. Austin patted a bulge in the front of his jacket. While Austin was flying to Maryland, Flagg had had someone from Langley pick up a change of clothes and his Bowen revolver from Austin's boathouse and deliver it to Andrews. George smiled. "I should have known better than to ask an ex-company man. But these might come in handy." He handed Austin a pair of night vision goggles and a beret. Austin was bundled into the Land Rover. An Air Force car escorted them to the exit, and a guard waved them through the gate. They traveled along a darkened highway at speeds of nearly 100 miles an hour for a time before the driver braked and turned off on a road that ascended into the mountains. George handed Austin a satellite photo and a flashlight. The photo showed a perfectly square building whose remote mountaintop location was accessed by a single road. George's phone chirped. He listened for a few moments and clicked off. He turned to Austin. "A car and an ambulance just arrived at the castle." "How long will it take us to get there?" Austin said. "Less than an hour. It's slow going on these mountain roads." "This is a matter of life or death," Austin said. George nodded and told the driver to pick up the pace. The car accelerated and went through a series of G-force turns around the hairpin switchbacks. As they neared their destination, George got a second call from his advance man. He had seen the car ascending the hill below and asked the driver to blink his headlights to identify himself. The driver hit the dimmer switch a couple of times. Seconds later, someone signaled with a flashlight from the side of the road. The car pulled over and George rolled his window down. A man's face was framed in the other car's window. The road is about 50 yards ahead, the man said. We'll go on foot from here, George said to the advance man. You lead the way. Austin got out of the Land Rover and slipped his night vision goggles over his eyes. He and the others followed the advance man along the edge of the road in a distance-eating trot. Balthazar carried Karina up the stairs and lowered her onto the statue's upraised arms. The drugs that had kept her unconscious for hours were wearing off. She awakened with an oily smell in her nostrils. As her vision cleared, she saw the hideous bronze face of Baal. Her arms and legs were bound in bandages, but she was able to move her head. She craned her neck and saw Balthazar standing at the base of the statue. I'd advise you not to struggle, Sheba. You're on a precarious perch. I'm not Sheba, you demented fool, and I want you to let me go. Your queenly haughtiness betrays you, Balthazar said. You are Sheba's descendant. You have Sheba's blood in your veins. You tempted me as your ancestor tempted Solomon. But Baal sent Austin to remind me of my family duty. And you are a madman as well as a fool. Perhaps, Balthazar said. He studied the elements of the scene like an artist contemplating a potential subject. He was reaching for a wall torch when he heard what sounded like gunfire. Austin had halted at the edge of the access road and dropped down on one knee. A match had flared ahead, and the breeze carried cigarette smoke his way. He could see a figure pacing back and forth in the grainy green vista produced by the night vision goggles. George tapped Austin on the arm. He pointed to himself and then to the sentry. Austin gave him an okay signal. George bent low and crept up on the unsuspecting guard. Austin watched as the figures merged. There was a grunt and the guard dropped to the ground. George waved the others on. Sloppy, George said as he stood over the unconscious guard. Sorry about that. Some of the guards had heard the sentry's grunt and came running to investigate. Shouts were coming from every direction. George was illuminated by light from an electric torch. He raised his hands to shield his eyes. Austin threw a flying block that knocked George out of the path of the fusillade that came next. George scrambled to his feet and unleashed a short burst from his machine pistol. The light went out, followed by screams of pain. Austin sprinted toward the castle and ran across the bridge over the dry moat. The mercenary guarding the door was trying to make sense of the shouts, moving lights, and gunfire. Unlike Austin, he didn't have the advantage of night vision. He didn't see the figure racing toward him with shoulders lowered until it was too late. Austin hit the man like a bowling ball. The guard crashed backward and his head snapped against the castle's wall. He slumped unconscious to the ground. Austin opened the heavy door and stepped into the coldness of the castle. With his bow extended in both hands, he quickly searched the first level and found the room with the big fireplace. The door at the back of the fireplace had been left open slightly, allowing a sliver of torchlight to escape. Tossing his night vision goggles aside, Austin kicked the door open and ran down the stairs. He stepped through an arched portal and took in the scene. The circular room with its grotesque statuary. The heavy smell of oil. Karina on the upraised arms. And Balthazar, who stood calmly beside the statue as if he had been expecting Austin. Austin, he said, his face contorted into a mask of fury. Somehow, I knew it was you. As a start, Austin wanted Balthazar away from Karina. He aimed the bowen. Fun's over, Balthazar. Come down from there. Balthazar ducked behind the statue and spoke into the voice tube. The hollow voice seemed to issue from the open mouth of the statue. Too late, Austin. Sheba rests in the arms of Baal. Austin heard a grinding noise underfoot and stepped back as the trap doors slid open to reveal the oil pit. Clenching his teeth in concentration, he stood with his feet wide apart, aimed the bowen at the statue's face, and squeezed the trigger. Chunks of metal went flying. The statue's nose disintegrated to expose its hollowed interior. Austin let off another round. The heavy bullet took off a cheek. Then he methodically shot out the rest of the statue's evil face. There was a shriek of pain, and Balthazar stepped out from behind the statue. His face was bloodied from flying metal. He reached out and grabbed a torch from the wall. Austin snapped off a wild shot. It missed, but in his haste to seek cover, Balthazar dropped the torch on the stairs. Balthazar descended the stairway to retrieve the flaming torch. Austin's gun was empty. He tucked it into the holster and sprinted up the stairs. Balthazar snatched up the burning brand and stuck it in Austin's face. Austin ducked and threw his shoulder into Balthazar's midsection. Balthazar dropped the torch, but he was a physical match for Austin, and his rage gave him added strength. They struggled for a moment, lost their footing, and rolled down the staircase to the edge of the pool. Balthazar headbutted Austin, got to his feet, and kicked Austin in the ribs. He aimed another kick at Austin's face. Austin ignored the searing pain, grabbed Balthazar's boot, and twisted. Balthazar stood on one foot, trying vainly to maintain his balance, and then fell head first into the pool. Austin scrambled to his feet and saw Balthazar trying to swim in the thick liquid. His head and face gleamed with the black oil. "Get back, Kurt!" The bandages that held Karina had stretched during her travels. She had freed herself and climbed off the statue's arms. Now she stood on the stairs, holding the torch in her hand. With her white dress and lovely features contorted in anger, she looked like an avenging angel. "Wait," Austin said. He started up the stairs. Karina hesitated. She started to lower the torch. Then she saw that Balthazar was trying to climb out of the pool, a task made difficult by the oil on his hands. He struggled at the edge like a reptilian monster emerging from the depths. Karina raised her arm back and threw the torch. It arced through the air ahead of a trail of embers and landed in the middle of the oil pit. There was a loud woof. Austin raced up the stairs and grabbed Karina around the waist. He pushed her into the space behind the statue and threw his body on top of hers. Although the statue shielded them from the searing heat, they were in danger of choking from the cloud of greasy black smoke that billowed up to the ceiling. Even with smoke escaping through the vent in the ceiling, the chamber was filled with toxic fumes within seconds. Austin was wrapping his arm tighter around Karina's slim body when he felt a handle on the wall. He pulled the handle and a section of wall slid back. Cold air flowed from the rectangular opening. Austin was barely able to get the words out, but he shouted at Karina to crawl through the opening. Then he followed her and slid the wall section shut. Austin dug a penlight out of his jacket and flashed it around. They were in a room barely bigger than a closet. The air was musty but free of smoke. He guessed that it had been built to protect Balthazar's ancestors when they were making sacrifices to Baal. They stayed behind the statue until the oil burned itself out. Austin slid the door open a crack. The air was foul but mostly free of smoke. They used some of Karina's gauze bandages to fashion makeshift smoke masks. Then they crawled out from behind the statue and made their way down the stairs to the door. As they passed the smoking fire pit, Karina averted her eyes. Austin glanced into the pool as if he expected Balthazar to crawl from the depths. But all he saw was the noxious blackness of the abyss.